to Deep in Bear Country, a Bear and Stain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we're taking a look at two books by Happy House Publishing, The Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish, and The Berenstain Bears and the Mansion Mystery. Now, why two books? Well, because they're not really Berenstain Bear books. These are, like The Night to Remember that we did a few episodes back, these are adaptations of episodes of The Berenstain Bears Saturday morning television show that premiered in 1985, and by this point was churning out episodes pretty fast and had its own tie-in books. Do these count as official Berenstain Bear books? I'm counting them because they have the charm and the characters and the look and feel of actual Berenstain Bear books, and they're on the list. They're product. They are out there. You can find them. I got my copies for a penny online. So the Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish and the Berenstain Bears and the Mansion Mystery are both published in 87, and like I said, they are adaptations of specific episodes, which I went ahead and viewed because I really want to take a look at what went into adapting an episode of the show into a storybook. It's a weird case of a television program's episodes being based on specific books and original adventures that were more or less written by Stan and Jan themselves. The ones based on the books were fairly faithful to the stories we know, while the new adventures brought in a lot of characters created simply for the television series, including Raffish Ralph, that weasel guy, and a bunch of other characters whose names I can't think of. I assume they were all played by Frank Welker, and using Frank Welker as a spring off board, and off which we will spring. Let's take a look at the Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish.
Look, it's old Jake. How you doing, Mr. Jake?
Want to see what them scallywags been tossing in here? Get a load of this.
Take it easy.
Sorry, they got carried away. It's just that this mess gets me hotter than a hornet's nest. How are you two cuckoos doing anyway?
We're fine, but it sounds like you've got a bad cough.
Now, both the TV show and the book follow the same basic plot. In fact, the book is extremely faithful to the plot of the episode. Papa Bear decides he's going to go out and catch Jake the catfish, who's the largest catfish in Grizzly Lake, or Lake Grizzly. When they get there, Papa can't catch anything because there's so much junk in the water, and when he leaves in frustration, the bear cubs, brother and sister, are secretly happy because Jake the catfish is apparently a friend of theirs. I'm gonna assume he was introduced earlier on in the show, otherwise we're just led to believe that he's an established character. It could be either way. I haven't watched the whole series again, not all the episodes are available, but Jake the catfish is presented as if he has been on the show before. So Jake the catfish shows up, he sounds a little bit like Rolf the dog, he's coughing up a storm because of all the pollution. So the bear cubs decide they need the help of actual factual bear who runs the Bearsonian Museum. They go and talk to him about, you know, hey, there's a lot of pollution in the water. So he decides the best thing to do is take an aerial view of the lake and see how bad things are getting. So they go up in a giant hot air balloon. Actual factual bear sees that this is a brilliant scene. This is a brilliant scene in the show, and it's a brilliant scene in the book.
All right, start scanning the shore for polluters.
You see anything? Do I? There goes a soda pop can into the water. That's a milk carton. Oh, I think I've got something big. Here, take a look, Professor.
Righto. Let's see what we have here. How awful. Totally inexcusable. I don't understand how some bears can be so irresponsible.
We see someone throwing in a bottle. We see people dumping trash cans. We see people sitting on the dock just tossing in banana peels. In the cartoon, you actually see boats out there. There's a yacht owned by someone named Squire Grizzly, who we will get to in a minute, who has a cook who's dumping like kitchen scraps into the lake. So the bear's not exactly taking care of Lake Grizzly. And actual factual knows this is bad, but he needs to know what's going on down inside Lake Grizzly. So he enlists the aid of the cubs because he's an adult with no friends or colleagues, apparently. They put on scuba suits and they dive down into the lake. Now, in the cartoon, they're wearing full body scuba suits. They're yellow. They cover up their heads, their faces. You can still hear them talking. In the book, they're kind of wearing scuba suits. Whoever illustrated the book, and again, I don't know who it was, could have been It's not Stan and Jam, but it's a good illustrator. Actual Factual is basically just wearing his outfit, his clothes, and he has he's still wearing his hat, his little newsboy hat. He's got on a tank and fins, but he's relatively unprotected. But they go down to the bottom of the lake in their outfits. Brother's wearing a blue skin suit, sister's wearing a pink one, and they see all the garbage all over the bottom of the lake. And Jake the catfish is there, old Jake, and he's like, "Yeah, it's getting pretty bad. We're having trouble living down here." In the cartoon, you actually get introduced to Jake's friend, who's an octopus. But in the books, they sort of pass over what is actually happening to the animals. But the cartoon does go into detail about the fact that fish breathe through their gills, and when the water gets polluted, they have trouble breathing, and how an octopus relies on bringing in water in order to repel itself. So the more polluted the water gets, the harder it is for an octopus to live in its own environment. But Actual Factual is just like, there's absolutely no way we're going to be able to clean this up. It's way too expensive. And old Jake says, "Wait a minute, I got a little something I've been putting aside for a rainy day." He points, and there is a pirate ship, a actual pirate ship, at the bottom of Lake Grizzly. In the cartoon, I believe they refer to him as Pirate Grizzly, but in the book, he's known as Black Bear the Pirate. And they're like, "It's Black Bear the Pirate's treasure ship. Went down more than 100 years ago." So 100 years ago in 1885, there was a pirate ship on Lake Grizzly. I don't understand if the writers understood how pirates worked, but they tended to not build their ships in a landlocked area. And maybe they just rode the boat around in the lake and looted their own town. I don't understand why it would have sunk. It seems maybe it just was poorly made. I don't know. But they go investigate the pirate ship, and lo and behold, there is treasure. Now, in the cartoon, the pirate ship starts falling apart around them. Assume the cartoon is going to be a little more slapsticky than the books. The cartoon is always a little more slapsticky. Papa Bear is always falling over. Things are smashing down around them. But they find a treasure, and it's just literally millions of dollars worth of treasure. But they don't know what to do with the ship itself, because Actual Factual says, "This is great. This money can help clean up the lake, but it's not going to stop the lake from getting polluted again," which I thought is a shrewd point. You can do all the cleanup you want, but it's really about education and awareness when it comes to not polluting. When I was a kid, I grew up in Texas, and there was this huge problem with littering on the freeways. You'd be driving down the freeway, and people would be just pitching cans and cups and napkins and just garbage out of their car windows. And it was, you just got used to the fact that driving on a highway in Texas, it was like driving through a dump. It was so filthy. And there was this campaign that was begun called the Don't Mess with Texas campaign. And what it did was, there were songs and hats and shirts and buttons and stickers and commercials all over the TV talking about not polluting in Texas. But it was presented in a way that you were told not to mess with Texas, because I'm not sure if you're aware of how Texans are. They tend to be somewhat proud of their state. And so what it did is appeal to state pride. It said, our state is something to defend and to defend against pollution. So don't mess with it. Don't mess with Texas. It conjured up the image of a state fighting back against a common enemy.
Well, you're riding down the highway in your fancy car, got that radio blasting, and you're feeling like a star. Zooming down the highway, and you got a heavy load. Don't you trash that Texas highway. Don't you throw it in the road. Don't you mess with Texas.
And that's awareness raising. That is beyond the physical act of cleaning up garbage. That's prevention. That's how you keep people from wanting to pollute. And what Actual Factual says is true. You've got to enact awareness. And so the Bears decide the best thing to do is to actually bring the sunken pirate ship up and use it as an attraction to remind people not to pollute. So Actual Factual gets this idea to use the hot air balloon to raise the pirate ship. And so what they do in both the cartoon and in the book is they tie the hot air balloon to the masts of the pirate ship and to the sides and to the rails, and then they fill it with helium. Now, in the cartoon, old Jake uses one of his octopus friends, not the same octopus we saw earlier, which I found interesting. It's a completely different color octopus. They use him to attach the balloon to the boat. They fill it with helium. It lifts the boat somehow in one piece out of the lake and brings it to the surface. And everyone's thrilled. And what ends up happening is it becomes an attraction, a floating museum to Bear Country. And it also stands as a reminder that there was a lot more at the bottom of this lake than just fish and just sea life. So it becomes a pirate ship museum to raise money, to continue their awareness campaign, to continue their littering campaign. And it also becomes a reminder that they should not pollute.
This boring museum's really a success.
Yes, it's reminding bears not to dump trash, and it's earning enough money to keep Lake Grizzly clean forever.
All right.
Hey, Cabroos! Professor, down here! You know, we just want to say thanks for what you're doing.
Now, what's interesting, beyond what I've already said, which was fascinating, about the Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish, is that this isn't the end of it. The Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish, later on, much later, became the Berenstain Bear Scouts and the Coughing Catfish, with pretty much the same plot, except it became a chapter book, one of the Bear Scouts' adventures. I'll be covering that much later on when we get to the chapter books, but believe me, we haven't heard the end of the story of the Coughing Catfish. What's really funny is the fact that the fish is coughing is just because it's polluted. It doesn't really have a whole lot to do with the storyline beyond that, and the fact that they're friends with the catfish, for whatever reason. As far as an episode of the show goes, it's lively. Again, we have Frank Welker, voice of everyone. He is everyone's voice. He's not the main character's voices. None of the Bear family are voiced by Welker, but he voices Actual Factual. I don't think he voices Jake the Catfish. I couldn't find a voice credit for Jake the Catfish, but someone famous voices Jake the Catfish. But Frank Welker is there. He is a talkin'. He is a Welkerin'. I love his Actual Factual. He's mildly British because smart, I guess. And man, I would just love to. I'd love to pick his brain about the Berenstain Bears, because he does a million voices in this show. Just a ton of voices, man. All right, that's the Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish. Oh, and the book. I like the book. I really like the book. It's again, I don't think this is Stan and Jan, but it's really nicely illustrated. It looks great. The cartoon looks like a Saturday morning cartoon. I always thought the Berenstain Bears Saturday morning cartoon was slightly better animated than most Saturday morning fare. And looking back on it and watching it again, I'm sticking by that. Much like the Garfield cartoon or the Peanuts cartoons, because the Berenstain Bears started as a series of like holiday specials and annual animated shows, it had established a look and a feel that the Saturday morning version adheres to. It captures a lot of that feel. It's a little more simply animated than the primetime specials, but very enjoyable. And I like the personalities of the bears. I like the voices of the bears. I think that it holds up, and so does this book. Again, it's easy to find. Hop on Amazon. Someone's got it out there. I got a paperback. It's fun. It's a fun little book. All right, moving on.
Papa, Squire Grizzly just phoned. He wants you to go over to his mansion right away.
Squire Grizzly? Wow, he's the richest bear in Bear Country.
And he said it was extremely urgent.
Wonder what he wants to see me about.
We're looking at a big old spook-em-up, a little spooky tale for us. Actually, it's sort of divided. The Berenstain Bears and the Mansion Mystery is based on the Berenstain Bears and the Mansion Mystery, the episode from the TV series. And while they tell the same story and follow the same plot, have the same characters, there's a different feel between the animated show and the book that's a little bit betrayed by the cover of the book, which shows the bear detectives and their dog Snuff and Papa Bear walking through what looks to be a haunted old mansion being glared at by a haunted painting. This is not the case of what the story is actually about, but the animated version tends to go a little spookier than the book does, even though they have the same plot. It contains a few more elements that aren't in the book that I actually missed in the book, even though the book is a more streamlined story and a little less irritating because it doesn't have all the hijinks, wackiness of the cartoon. It's also got a couple little plot points that are different, which leads me to wonder if the books were produced before the animation began, like before they had to change things at the animation level. But in any case, the story basically goes that Papa Bear is working on some stuff. Remember, Papa Bear builds furniture, and he gets a call from Squire Grizzly. Now, you may remember Squire Grizzly as the bear whose cook was dumping garbage off the yacht into Lake Grizzly, which may give you an idea of the kind of bear he is. He is the richest bear in Bear Country, and he's got a mansion. And Papa Bear gets a call from him that he wants Papa Bear at the mansion right away. Now, the cubs and Cousin Fred are playing at the treehouse, and they decide they want to tag along. And Papa Bear, being a nice Papa Bear is like, great. So they drive up to the mansion, which is beautiful, and immediately go to the back door. And Cousin Fred asks, you know, hey, Unc, which he calls him only in the TV show and the adaptations. He never calls him Unc in the book series, which, so that's funny. Also, Freddy's voice is weird. I don't know how else to describe it. He's the only one. He sounds like a very, very, very small child. But in any case, he says, hey, why are we going to the back door? And Papa Bear says, look, Mrs. Squire Grizzly, what's her name? Lady Grizzly doesn't let anybody come in the front door, not even Squire Grizzly. So you know who we're dealing with. The door gets answered by the butler, Grisby. And all of a sudden we hear Lady Grizzly scream. And what's happened is three of her antiques have been stolen.
You mean something's been stolen?
Three somethings? They're priceless antiques. My great aunt's writing desk, an exquisite love seat, and a pepper mill. It's been in my family for generations.
In the book, it's a carved chest, a writing desk, and a pepper mill. I'm going to assume that has something to do with the script changing before it went to production. Whatever. Same basic idea. Three of her antiques are missing, and the brother bear decides to call it the bear detective. So Freddy whistles, here comes Snuff, they get their hats on, and they go looking around the house. Now, one thing that's hinted at in the book, but played a little bit more explicitly in the cartoon, is that Squire Grizzly keeps trying to get Papa Bear's attention, but Papa Bear's too busy trying to solve the mystery. He goes looking for secret passageways and accidentally finds a coat closet. Snuff starts sneezing like crazy, and they find peppercorns all over the floor. I'm gonna take a brief break here just to say that peppercorns, everyone, peppercorn doesn't make you sneeze. Not even in a cartoon. Ground pepper will make you sneeze. Not peppercorn. But these peppercorns are making people sneeze like crazy. And then the next thing you know is Lady Grizzly sits down, because she just keeps fainting all over the place, sits down in a chair, spins around, gets sucked into the wall. Secret passageway. So something's going on in this mansion. Now here's where the feel of the cartoon and the feel of the book take a little detour from one another. Same plot, same basic events happen. But Papa wants to know what's going on, so he sends one of the cubs to find Squire Grizzly. And in the cartoon, he sends Cousin Fred. In the book, he sends Sister. It's not really a big deal. It's just interesting that that changed. When they come back, they can't find the Squire, and they can't find Grisby the butler either. This sends up alarm bells. Now, what happens in the cartoon is they start hearing a mysterious laugh. And it's coming from behind a painting whose eyes are following them.
You hear that? It's coming from the painting.
Yikes!
Let's get out of here! Hurry!
They panic and they start running, and they run down a hallway full of suits of armor. And as they pass each suit of armor, the suits of armor attempt to chop at them or just barely miss them with their giant axes, scaring them out of the house. Now, in the book, there is no painting, and they just go investigating the armor room with Snuff leading the way. And as they walk through, the axes fall, and it could be Snuff's sneezing that shakes them loose. Snuff sneezes really loud, and the axes fall down, but it's enough to send them running. The cartoon has a much more sinister feel. It's actually kind of a Scooby-Doo feel. There's something lurking in the house, and you see eyes watching them, and you feel like someone is in there trying to do them harm. So same basic events happen, different feel that's left completely out of the storybook. I don't really blame them. It's kind of probably hard to build up in this quick of a story, and this is for little kids, and you don't want to freak them out too much. So I guess they softened it a bit. However, what ends up happening is Snuff leads them to a tiny cottage, an overgrown shed. And when they look inside it, in the book, they just look through the window. In the cartoon, it's dark and they have to turn on their flashlights. But they find the missing antiques. Next thing you know, Squire Grizzly shows up. He's sneezing. He's covered in pepper because he's had the peppercorns in his pockets. They've fallen out of his pockets. That's what led to the trail. And you find out that he's the one who stole the antiques. Now, it's quickly figured out that Squire Grizzly hid the antiques from his wife because he was going to give them to Papa to be fixed. Because I forgot to mention this, when they find the antiques in the shed, they are in terrible shape. Squire Grizzly called Papa to come take the antiques away as a surprise for his wife. He was surprised by her returning home early from a vacation. So he had to somehow get her out of the way. So he tricked her into sitting in the chair that fell into the secret passageway. And then it's implied, it's never stated, but you get the sense that he's the one who was inside the house, scaring them all out of the house, guiding them to the shed. That's in no way implied in the book, but you sort of figure that out from watching the episode. Now, there's a hilarious line in the book where Sister says, "You removed the pepper mill. You stole it." And then Papa Bear says, "Squire Grizzly, you're under arrest for stealing your own antiques." And I don't think Papa actually has the power to arrest people. I don't think the bear detectives have any actual authority in Bear Country, but I could be wrong. In any case, they take them away in their car before Lady Grizzly finds out. Later on, apparently, they bring them back. Everyone's very happy with the antiques. Lady Grizzly's happy. Squire Grizzly's happy.
What a delightful surprise!
Happy birthday, dear. You see, they weren't stolen. I was simply sending them out for repair.
You are a master craftsman indeed. My antiques are as good as new.
No problem. Just a couple of coats of shellac and glue, 3 grades of sandpaper, finishing nails. Well, Snuff, another unsolvable case solved by the Bear Detective.
Now, as an episode of the show, it works. It's very Saturday morning cartoon adventure. It sits well, though, with what we know about the Bear Detectives, what we know about Papa Bear. He is always screwing things up when it comes to the mysteries in his life. He's always assuming things without checking. It's not as overbearing as some of the other bear mysteries, the bear detective stories we've read. He's not as incompetent, and there actually is a mystery here. Now, like I said, in the cartoon, Squire Grizzly is given a little bit more to do. He's constantly trying to get Papa Bear's attention, and you get more hints as to what's actually going on. The book streamlines it a bit, gets rid of some of the oppressive atmosphere, but it's still a good quick read. I enjoyed it. I think that these two books, The Berenstain Bears and The Coughing Catfish, and The Berenstain Bears and The Mansion Mystery, are both worth having. They're good storybooks as far as, you know, tie-ins. As a kid in the 80s, I read a lot of cartoon tie-ins. I read Masters of the Universe tie-ins. I read Transformers tie-ins. I read GoBots tie-ins. I've even got some in my house. And they're almost universally very bad. The characters are always way off model. They're usually based on just stock, character poses that are just traced on by just freelancers just looking for a quick buck. The coloration is usually way off. The characters don't behave like the characters. It's mostly just narration and your basic plot, just something to sell to the kids at their Scholastic book fairs. These books, I'm going to say that the Berenstain Bear books, they're made to look like official Berenstain Bear books. The layouts are nice. The colors are vibrant. The characters have that freelancer look to them. These are not drawn by Stan and Jan, as far as I can tell. But they don't look as simple and crude as the characters in the cartoon. They have personality. These are really nicely illustrated. They're beautifully colored. Like I said, one thing that I've always admired about these adaptations and these sort of freelance books is most of them manage to maintain, if not the actual look, then the overall feel of a Berenstain Bear book. And I am going to go ahead and I'm going to credit Stan and Jan for that. They had a lot on their plate at this point. I know that at this point in their lives, Stan was experiencing a lot of health issues. So he wasn't able to participate as fully in the creative process as he wanted to. I know Jan was taking a lot of the work on her shoulders, and I know they brought in a family at this point to help start helping out with the business because things were getting really, really busy. I'm going to stop and admire the fact that the level of quality control they put over their product stayed as high as it did. It's not perfect. Obviously, it's not going to be perfect. These are not the labors of love that some of their better books are, but they are worth pursuing. They have their names on the front, and I think that as long as they were putting their names on the covers of these books And they were going to, they only wanted to release something that they could take pride in. So the Berenstain Bears and the Coughing Catfish, the Berenstain Bears and the Mansion Mystery, I give thumbs up to. If you can get your hands on them, go right ahead. You're not going to regret paying money for them. They're good to read to kids. The characters act like the characters, and they're good reflections of the cartoon, which, again, is a worthy cartoon, and I really wish there would be a nice official release of it. I believe Frank Welker was the voice of Squire Grizzly. I can't, you know, put money on that. Don't hold me to it. But Mr. Welker was so much a part of the Berenstain Bears cartoon. I hope it's work that he's proud of, if he ever even thinks of it at all. I think he's 70 now. He has done literally more cartoons in his career than actually exist. And if you ever hear an animal in a movie, it's most likely voiced by him, even if it was just a dog bark. So remember that. Frank Welker, man of a drillion voices. We love you so much. You're great. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. I am going to be coming back with yet another Happy House book soon. The Berenstain Bears and the something or other pirate treasure. I don't know. There's a lot of pirates in Bear Country, I guess. It's seemingly a landlocked area, but I guess as long as there's, maybe they're coming up from under the lake. Maybe there is a cavern under the lake that connects to the ocean, like a Goonie style. So I don't know. In any case, lots of pirates in Bear Country. The cartoon and the books, different worlds, different universes, different feels, different purposes, both just as charming as each other. So seek them out. So in the next few weeks, we're going to be covering more books. We're going to be covering more collectibles. We're going to be covering maybe more shows. I don't know. I'm going to try to have some more guests on. We're going to be having a lot of fun with these bears. Thank you so much. You can find me at berensteinbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on iTunes. Hey, if you're listening to iTunes like right now, just click over to my show and give me a review, like a rate. Don't even review the show. Just rate the show. Like, if you think it's a good show, just click on, like, I want to rate this show, and then click on a star. That's really all you have to do. You don't have to type things. I think maybe that intimidates people. They're like, I don't have time to sit down and write a review. You don't even have to review it. Just rate it. Just give me a star rating, and that'd be great, because the more votes I get, the more people are going to think this is a legit thing to listen to. So that'd be awesome. And there I am. So I'm there. I am on Twitter at BStainBearcast. Drop me a line. You can also write to me at BearenstainBearcast@gmail.com. And meanwhile, in the meantime, I'm Phil Gonzalez, and I will see you next time deep in Bear Country.